from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. We turn now to a new film by local filmmaker Jason Cohen. It's a story that begins 35 years ago. A gay 13-year-old boy named Matthew is being bullied constantly in school, but his strict and religious mother has no sympathy.
My mother asked the question of, why do you think that out of all the kids in the class, why are they picking on you? I said, well, it's obvious they're picking on me because I'm gay. And she's like, no child of mine will live in this house if they choose to live in sin. And then she physically drags me across the floor and throws me out.
And at that same time, there was another boy searching for identity, but in a very different way. His name is Tim, and he was drawn to the violent punk rock scene in L.A.
My very first hardcore punk rock show. There's something in the air. There was anger. There was fear. And for me, the violence made me feel big.
Tim and Matthew, two kids whose worlds were about to collide. What happened during one violent night 35 years ago and what happened to them years later frames the story Jason Cohen has captured in his Oscar-nominated film, Facing Fear. And Jason Cohen joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Terrific film. It opens, by the way, we should say, tonight at the Opera Plaza in San Francisco and Camera Cinemas in San Jose. And Jason, by the way, will be at Opera Plaza for some Q&A after the film screening. Let's pick up on this remarkable story. We have these two kids who in some ways couldn't be more different, both landing in the streets of L.A. And tell us a little bit more about who they are and what their lives were like when they first were about to meet.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on it just there where you said there were two kids searching for their identity in very different ways. But it was obvious in first talking to them that they did have a lot of similarities. They obviously ended up on much different tracks, but they did both come from sort of a suburban landscape and were sort of both outsiders in their world. And, you know, their paths did eventually end up crossing, unfortunately, in this horrific incident.
Before we get to the incident itself, let's just set up a little bit more of, in some ways, what their hopes were in the case of Matthew and in the case of Tim, what he was searching for and drawn to.
The people that I gravitated towards were called Nazi punks. Tuesday nights, we're going to go to the Starwood and we're going to get in a fight with whoever. And then the next day, we're supposed to go to school. When we were on the rampage, you stood a very good chance of getting hurt.
I remember arriving in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be great. But unfortunately, the daily routines became the same as they were in San Francisco. Hustling and selling my body was no longer this terrible, awful victimization. It was a means to an end. But I always had this little, like, I'm going to make it because I'm still going to prove her wrong.
Proving his mother wrong. That was Tim. So set the scene for us, Jason. Where do their worlds come together? And then we'll hear what happened that night.
So they, you know, both Matthew ends up on the streets in West Hollywood. He's a street kid. He's living in a park, homeless. At the time, this is the late 70s, you know, West Hollywood is sort of becoming a bit of a gay mecca, but there was also a lot of kids, I think, pouring in and living on the streets. Tim was running with this crowd, as he talks about, the Nazi punks, which was sort of an offshoot of the punk scene. And I think it's important to point out that the punk scene in general was a very vibrant community and very welcoming, and this Nazi punks was just a small offshoot. And the punk community as a whole really did not appreciate this group, and so far as Jello Biafra and Dead Kennedys put out a song about it, and so that's just important to put out there, that the punk scene in general was a very vibrant community, and it was a positive experience for a lot of these kids. So, but anyway, the two of them ended up meeting one night, as you know, Tim was out on the rampage with his buddies, and they picked out Matthew just based on perceiving him as a gay teenager.
And let's listen then to what happened next.
I turned and I saw that the rest of the people that I was with were kicking somebody on the ground.
They started beating, punching me first, then kicking me as hard as they could in order to get me down to the ground.
I saw that he was still moving, and I said something to the effect of, "What's wrong with you guys? You know, don't you know how to put a boot in?"
I remember looking into that face. I remember looking at that mohawk in those eyes.
I kicked him in the forehead, and he was out.
And so Matthew is out cold on the sidewalk, and Tim thinks he may have killed him.
Yeah. You know, and Tim in the film talks about basically they left and, you know, he assumed or thought that they that he probably had died and went through what he thought the rest of his life, either thinking that or not knowing that until...
But Matthew survives, and they each, their journeys continue. Give us a snapshot of what happens to each of them in subsequent years.
So Matthew survives the attack. He lives on the street for about three more years, and through a chance meeting ends up at a party. And some people say, you know, he asked if he could stay on the couch. They said, yes, if you get a job. He gets a job at a McDonald's, ends up sort of getting his life together, goes to beauty school, and actually ends up having about a 20-year career in Hollywood as a hairstylist and colorist working with celebrities, and then eventually ends up at the Museum of Tolerance after sort of deciding he wants to do something more with his life. Tim goes a very different route, and Tim sort of falls deeper and deeper into the white power movement and actually becomes sort of one of the key figures, leaders in his area in around Los Angeles in that movement, which made it a lot harder for him to get out. But eventually, I think Tim matured. Part of that was having a son, and he matured and started to realize sort of what he was doing with his life and doing to other people and how it was affecting people. And he started to slowly pull out of the movement and eventually did get out.
And then the really extraordinary part of your film and their story happens because they wind up talking to each other, not knowing who each other is.
Correct. Matthew eventually ended up as the manager of the Museum of Tolerance. And you know, it's ironic that these two men end up meeting at the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. And Tim ends up being a speaker there as a former neo-Nazi talking about his past. And they get paired together to talk about a school group they're going to go speak to, and the conversation kind of leads to backgrounds, and they eventually, in a pretty dramatic moment, figure out that they had crossed paths before.
And Tim Zoll joins us now by telephone. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you take us back to that moment and that first conversation with Matthew, and when you realized that you were now looking at the person who you had kicked all those years before and thought might have died, what that moment was like?
Numbing, pretty much. I think it was probably that way for both of us. We really didn't process it at that time. I think we both wanted to get away from each other, and, you know, it was a very awkward moment. We had been working together for a while, but we had not recognized one another physically. But the only two people who would have been there would have been people who would have known about it would have been people who were there. I jumped on a bus and left, and Matthew went back to the museum, and it was about 2 weeks before we saw each other again.
And part of what becomes clear in the film, and I'd like both you, Tim and Jason, to comment on this, is that forgiveness doesn't happen instantly. There's no sort of sudden epiphany. It took you a while, right, Tim? I mean, it's like a process that you had to go through.
Absolutely. We were doing presentations, and you know, once I had apologized
at the museum. Uh-huh.
At the museum, we were doing presentations, a Hate to Hope presentation at the Museum of Tolerance, and you know, there was definitely an elephant in the room. You could tell that we were both going through a process. Matthew was going through his process of forgiveness. I started to have young people especially ask certain questions, one of which was, you know, Matthew's forgiven you, God's forgiven you, but have you forgiven you? And I never really gave it that much thought prior to that. And the more that that question was asked, the more I would internalize it. And it actually got to the point where I had so much self-guilt and self-hatred, whatever you want to call it, to where I really struggled with it. Couldn't look myself in the mirror. There was times when if I knew we were going to go do a presentation, I would wait till the very, very last minute to leave or get ready. I did not want to go.
Yeah. It's such an interesting part of the film to me, Jason Cohen, that you get this real sense of how hard this is. That's not surprising. But we're sort of used, I think, in storytelling or in filmmaking that there's going to be this sudden, revealing, wonderful moment where everything happens. Mm-hmm. And it's not like that.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, a big point of the film. You know, our goal in the film was to really explore this process of forgiveness. We made the film in conjunction with the Fetzer Institute, who does a lot of work about promoting awareness of forgiveness. And our goal was to tell the story and show that this is not a cut and dry process. This was a long thing that these two had to go through and go through a lot of personal examination, you know, as Tim talks about and he talks about in the film. You know, the big thing for him was forgiving himself and his past and looking at that. And I think a lot of people, when you hear about forgiveness, you are naturally look to the victim as the person who has the burden, who must forgive the perpetrator. But we really wanted to show that this was a two-way street, that Tim was going through as much as Matthew.
And by the way, we had hoped Matthew would be able to join us, but he was unable to do so because I think he has like 300 kids that he's showing through the museum at this very moment. But Tim, I read in an article that you said, for a while, Matthew sort of tested you and would sort of prod and bait you a little bit in some of those presentations. It's clear that this was not something that came easily or readily to him.
No, and you know, I don't know why, but not only did he test me sometimes then, but he would test me other times as well, you know, away from the museum as well. But I just reacted how I would react to anything else, and I knew that he was going through whatever, and let the test of time usually is a healer, and the only way that I could prove to anybody that I'm genuine or a changed person or whatever is by the way that I carry myself and by the way I live my life, and that's all I can do.
Tim Zoll, who now serves as a consultant for that museum and joining us along with Jason Cohen, the filmmaker. The film, again, is Facing Fear. It will be shown this evening, opens tonight at Opera Plaza in San Francisco and Camera Cinemas in San Jose. It's Oscar-nominated, one of the Oscar shorts nominated this year. And we'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment on this story, if you've undergone your own process of forgiveness, were you able to do so if you were the victim of a particular act? How were you able to forgive them? If you haven't yet been able to forgive that person or an organization, whatever, what is it that's keeping you from it? We'd like to hear your perspective, too. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Jason, how has this film been used to provoke an ongoing dialogue about this? Because this event that happened, 35 years ago, we still read about incidents. Yeah. Hate crimes, obviously, are still very much a part of us. Is it your hope that this film can play a role in getting us beyond where we are right now in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I looked at the Matthew and Tim story and thought that it would be make for a film, we wanted to explore the forgiveness process, but we also recognized that the fact that this was a gay bashing at the time, gay hate crimes, the word hate crime didn't exist, But knowing that it's still so relevant today, bullying particularly, and we see it now in the news more because people are more willing to talk about it, but it is still happening. So that was a big impetus for me to do the film and get these issues out there and people talking about them. I mean, even here, we live here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we kind of feel like we're in this very kind of protected, liberal, progressive area. But, you know, even here, things happen. And, you know, there was an incident back in November. I live in Berkeley, and, you know, there was the Sasha Fleischman case, you know, and that happened while we were making the film. And I think that kind of reinforced that, yeah, something like this needs to be out there. And we've gone to schools with the film. And that, you know, to be honest, the goal of the film when we made it was educational. And we're planning to do a pretty robust outreach with the film to schools, universities. There's been a big demand already.
Jason, Tim, rather, do you feel, you know, sometimes things happen to us in life and it becomes part of your identity, and you then, and then a window opens up and you have an opportunity to stay, have that identity be life-changing, and be life-changing not only for you but for others. Do you feel like now this is your calling?
Well, I've been doing this sort of thing for, you know, 12 years already, and was doing it for 5 years before Matthew came on the scene. I will tell you that I was beginning to feel like I was, you know, a hamster in the wheel. And when this the attack and me and Matthew came and our story came to light, it did change things quite a bit. I think maybe, I don't know for sure, but I may have stopped doing what I was doing had this not come to light, and it's given me the opportunity to continue my work. I've always wanted to work with either at-risk youth or as a social worker or something in that capacity, although I'm not technically doing that you know, with a degree or as a social worker, I still am helping people. So,
and say something more, Tim, about the importance of forgiveness. What you have taken from that's been life changing for you. You made the comment a little bit earlier about the question of forgiving yourself. Have you been able to do that? What is it that allowed you to take that process and move forward?
Well, first of all, it is an ongoing process, and it is a lifelong process. There are good days and there are bad days. It depends on what's happening in my life. I tend to have a very tumultuous personal life at times, but it does help me to get my mind off of those things. The main thing is that it's never over, and there are times. When I was a young kid, if I were to tell myself from the future, oh, when you get older, you're going to have all these things happen, you know, I thought of consequences as going to jail, things like that. I never thought it would become an internal struggle. But my internal struggle has become something that helps others. So if I can help one person out of an audience or one of your listeners or whatever, to be able to move past or know that it does get better later on in life, or there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, there's a whole bunch of cliches I could use, but life does get better. But nevertheless, it is ongoing.
And it seems like that's so central to your film, Jason Cohen, this what seems in a sense almost contradictory, that both things are true, that you can get past something, that you can move on, that life can improve, and yet it's still always with you.
Yeah. You know, I think both Matthew and Tim, I think, will probably echo this, that, you know, for them, this incident and what has happened is part of them. It's part of their fabric and their makeup. And that's with the film, we kind of wanted to explore that. And I think, you know, they've both said, you know, forgive but never forget. They don't want to forget what happened as much as they'd like to. They don't want to forget because it is part of them, and it's important to have that there as a reminder. So I think that's something that it sticks with them. And for some people, I think you block things out. But as much as they blocked it out for 25 years, I think they both blocked out for 25 years. Now, when it came back into their life, it's something that's there for them.
And is that central then, do you think, Jason, to what it means to forgive? That forgiveness doesn't mean it's gone away, that it's wiped out, forgotten about, left behind completely. It's still there. But you still are able to move forward. You're not trapped by it, but you don't pretend that it never happened.
Right. And I think, you know, for Matthew and Tim, it was a freeing process, the forgiveness. It was freeing from all these emotions that they had, but the emotions are still there, but they had a sense of freedom by confronting it and going through this with each other.
The film, again, is Facing Fear. It'll be on tonight at the Opera Plaza in San Francisco, Camera Cinemas in San Jose. Jason will be at Opera Plaza tonight for a Q&A following the film. As you all know, this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, you can go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Tim Zoll, tell me what forgiveness means to you. If you had to define it in a sentence, what would that be?
Forgiveness is letting go. It is freeing. However, as it was already discussed, it is always there. And it will creep up and bite you if you let it. But this whole experience has been very freeing for me. You also have to understand that I've been involved with a lot of stuff besides as far as violence and hurting people and things like that. So this also helps me to change my life and look towards the future more. I'm more free to do that. I have let go a lot of things as a result of this. Some of those things seem very futile to me in comparison to what a lot of other people go through. And I do have a lot more empathy for others as a result. So it has been very freeing and has given me strength to step out in faith or whatever and do what needs to be done. And the right thing to do, at least in my life, is when I am wrong, when I have hurt somebody, you know, whether unknowingly or on purpose for whatever reason, jealousy, whatever, for me, and this might not work for everybody, but it's worked for me, when I apologize, I've taken care of my side of the street, you know, and the same thing happened when I apologized to Matthew. I didn't know how he was going to react. All I knew is that I could no longer let that fester inside me because it does become like a poison.
And what about for Matthew, since he was unable to join us, Jason, what do you think his definition of forgiveness would be and what it has meant to him?
Well, you know, Tim might be able to answer this better, obviously, because he's been with Matthew for so long. But, you know, for me, you know, from Matthew, what I felt was it's a little back to what I had said before. You know, he had blocked this incident out completely for 25 years and didn't acknowledge it. And I think for him to be able to confront it, and it brought up a lot of things in his own life and other relationships in his life, which we get into in the film, personal relationships with his family that he had issues with. And there's issues of forgiveness. And I think that was a big thing for him going through this process that led to that.
It's a particularly poignant part of the film in the end when you circle back to the question of how he can come to terms with, in some ways, as it, perhaps even more painful, the episode with his mom tossing him out of the house at the age of 13.
Yeah, exactly. I think just for them, both of them going through this, it brought up a lot of emotions that maybe had been hidden away.
Let's take a couple of calls. Audrey in San Mateo. Audrey, go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm a...
Yes, you're on the air, Audrey. Go ahead.
Okay. I was gang raped when I was 14, and I... it happened because I saw a situation shaping up when I was on the street at night. I was living overseas at the time, and I didn't act. I was afraid to look stupid because maybe it wasn't really happening. Was it really going to go bad? And it did go bad. And I came out of that knowing two things. One was I always needed to throw the first punch. And the other was I needed to be in control of every man in the world. And I felt like there was this monster that had been put inside of me, and I was battling with it all the time. And after, and I was hurting people around me because of it. And then after some really good therapy, I realized that they hadn't put a monster inside of me, and that my reaction was my own, and it was my strength. And I learned what I call how to lie down with the dragon. And the dragon is still inside of me, but it's kind of like we're friends now. Yep. And I'm in my mid-50s now. Hmm. And one of the things that I learned when I realized how to lay down with the dragon was that those men that hurt me live in that world. That's their world. That's always going to be real for them. But it doesn't have to be for me, and I can actually make a choice to live in a kind and gentle world.
And Audrey, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I want to get Tim's reaction because we just have a moment or two left. But it's such a powerful point, I think, Tim, about in the end, part of this is about coming to terms with something painful, whether you were the perpetrator or the victim, and then figuring out how you're going to regain control of your life.
Absolutely. And my heart goes out to you, to the caller. And it's very true. It is always there. You know, there was a young lady that was with us the evening of the attack, and I will tell you that she was screaming and hollering, "Oh my God, I think you guys are killing him." And that voice stuck with me for most of my life, and even later in life when I got involved with organized hate groups, I think it might have even saved a few lives because it would come to the forefront at times. So yeah, it is always there. It's how you deal with it, and whether perpetrator or survivor, or I don't like to use the word victim, so I'll say survivor. It is something that does stick with us. It's how we deal with it. And looking away from it and pushing it away does tend to make it worse.
Tim Zoll, thank you so much, Tim, for not only participating in our story, our program today, but for going the path that you're going and doing the good that I know you are doing by continuing this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jason Cohen, thanks to you as well. Congratulations on making a splendid short film. Harder, I think, sometimes to make a splendid short film than a long one.
Yes.
Jason Cohen, producer-director of Facing Fear. The film opens tonight, Opera Plaza in San Francisco, where Jason will be for some Q&A, and at Camera Cinemas in San Jose also this evening. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Our engineer today, Danny Bringer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.